With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete. Good morning to you, and welcome in 106.7 The Fan. We are Grant and Danny, and we are keeping you company until 2 o'clock today. Chad Dukes versus the world from 2 to 6.30. And how about this, Danny? You know, last couple of weeks in the evenings here on 106.7 The Fan, we played all of the winning games for the Nationals on their way to the World Series. Starting tonight at 6.30, we will be replaying every win of the 2018 Stanley Cup playoff run for the Washington Capitals. Starting with Game 3 of the first round against the Blue Jackets when they were down 2-0 in that series to Columbus.
You know what's so weird about this as the perennially panicked Washington, D.C. sports fan before the Capitals and Nationals correctly won delicious and delightful championships? I had a weird, I don't know if you remember this, Chiefs, but I was weirdly confident even when they were down 2-0 to Columbus. I felt like it wasn't their destiny to lose to Columbus. Now, what I will say where I was wrong is I thought it was their destiny once again to not be able to get past Pittsburgh for the millionth time out of a million. Of course, everything would change. But it really did start to change in that Game 3 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. It could have gone either way. I think there was like a million posts hit by Columbus, and then you get your overtime game winner that started that incredible run. Well, honestly, it was just every bit as improbable as the Nationals run. We forget about it now because the Nationals were the latest and the greatest, and that was just an amazing experience. But the Capitals, constantly down, constantly behind in series, constantly down in games, didn't matter. That team was relentless. Give me a hockey writer to write hockey buzzsaw like Jesse Doherty did for the Nationals because that run was amazing. Can't wait to start reliving it tonight.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that maybe I learned during those championship runs because you always wonder. For years and years, my teams didn't do that. And
right.
I never saw anything like a championship journey. And I kind of watched other people celebrate and other fan bases get theirs, and I always wondered what it would be like. But I guess the realization for me is the difference between the teams that do it and the teams that don't is kind of quirkiness, is some luck, is some bounces. And I don't just mean in hockey where we always talk about puck luck and the bounce of the rubber, but also in baseball, the ball that, you know, just goes foul or just stays fair and hits the foul pole. You know, the number of times something within inches could have gone differently or a call you got that you didn't used to get. And everything would have been different, and history is different, and jobs are lost, and we, you know, call people choke artists for years and years and years. I guess that's my big takeaway is on the many years where you're out in the first round or the second round, like the Capitals almost were against Columbus, if not for the bounce they got on the puck off Lars Eller's skate into the back of the net in overtime, after a post got hit, by the way, the other direction. They would have been down 3-0, and they would have been maybe swept, and the entire team would have been blown up at that point by Brian McClellan. Instead, you get that fortuitous break, you win that game, you come back to dominate that series after a goalie change, and at that point you're kind of skiing downhill like
a month later
Molly.
You're drunk in a fountain.
Bloom.
You know, a month later you're getting arm tattoos. A month later you're celebrating like no team has ever celebrated. Just speaking of that, over the weekend, everyone's just so starved for either, you know, good feelings or having some fun or kind of just sort of this, another unique manifestation of this self-quarantine, stay-at-home type stuff. One of my buddies just sent out a link. He goes, I'm watching Game 5 of the National League Division Series. Nats Dodgers. Just decided that's what he was doing. So he pauses it, and a few of us now just sort of happen to be near computers or whatever, and I beamed it to my television, and we started watching it at the same time. And we're just sort of live texting back and forth, just like it was the fall of 2019 again. Just along those same kind of lines.
Were you watching the Masson rerun this weekend, or was this something else?
Just on YouTube. Just on YouTube. Yeah. Just Game 5 on YouTube. You know, so then I've got it on my TV set, and we're just sort of texting back and forth. A couple things. Number one, 85% of that game was terrible. It just felt like another one of those letdowns, like the air was let out. Then even once Rendon and Soto go back-to-back to tie that thing at three, Will Smith, not the Fresh Prince, but the catcher for the Dodgers, drills a ball to right center field. The Dodgers believe the game is over. The Dodgers are pouring out of the dugout. Smith pimps it, drops his bat. He is just homered, or at a minimum, drilled the ball off the wall over an outfielder's head with a runner on first base. The Dodgers are going to win that game. Somehow, it settles in Adam Eaton's glove, middle of the warning track. It just, that ball doesn't stay in the yard any other year, but it did that year. The ball Jock Peterson hit that was fouled by a fraction of a millimeter. Little things like that that we now don't remember because of the heroics of Howie Kendrick, the heroics of Rendon and Soto and everybody else, you know, propel them to this unstoppable force that it's going to culminate in you and me getting hammered on a parade float. But it was razor thin, just kind of to your point of a post gets hit, a ball that normally hits the wall or goes over doesn't, and they continue and they win. Just amazing to think about what it takes to get through those incredible, incredibly tense moments.
Speaking of incredible, one of DC's most iconic and legends passed away yesterday. We will honor the life of Bobby Mitchell coming up in just a few minutes here on Grant and Danny. Also today on the show right here on 106.7 The Fan, we'll talk with a couple of the historian writers who have been covering the Skins for decades, who have written books about this team's history. David Elfin will be with us at 11:30 and Rick Snyder at 1:30 today to talk about Bobby Mitchell and what he meant, not just to Washington football, but to the National Football League as well. The first ever black player in Redskins history. Very, very sad. A guy that was with the organization for over 30 years died yesterday. So we'll get into that in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. I will say, Danny, yesterday was gorgeous, and today's going to be nicer.
Yeah.
And in terms of this quarantine and just trying to get outside, I mean, today is a yard work. You know, get that walk in, go for a run. Maybe you got a young one, take the stroller for a little cruise around the block kind of day. It's already about 60 degrees. It's going to be right under 70, I think, most of the day. I was looking at 68, 69 degree average temperature this afternoon in and around D.C. So this is probably one of the nicest weather days of the year. I'm seeing that it could rain tomorrow, and then we'll be back into the mid-70s on Wednesday. But today is going to be gorgeous. I think nothing better than some sunlight. Get out, get that vitamin D, walk around a little bit, get some fresh air when you're feeling like you've been cooped up and a little depressed like most of us are at this point.
Little things now, man. I'm telling you, I never would have thought, hey, we could play in the backyard for a couple hours after the show would have been something I look forward to or we're excited about, you know. But, hey, we can walk around the block, and that's cool. Like, just little things like that at this point I now am just so grateful for. You're right, because tomorrow
I'll one-up you with a weird story like that.
Yeah.
So when you go on your walks, I would suggest you take the show with you via radio.com, plug the earbuds in, or just keep it going in the stroller and you know, in the cup holder, so to speak, and blare that audio out for everyone to hear as you walk past. So I have taken the exact same route on walks. I've lived in the house I live in this moment, which is for sale as of today, hopefully. Okay, we are hitting the market.
Here we go.
Friend. At a perfect time, by the way.
What do you
perfect
say,
time
GP?
To hit the mark.
Open house.
So I have been in this home since 2014, and I have taken the exact same route on my walks 1,000 times. Okay?
I can't believe you, a creature of habit, would take the same route. I can't.
I know, right?
It.
But I've never once kind of navigated away and walked the other direction. I have to go across a main road into a neighborhood, and who knows what's over there. So I've just always kind of stuck to my path. As you know, as you joke, that's kind of what I do. So this weekend, randomly, we just decide. I'm like walking. My wife's with me. She goes, let's go this way. And I'm like, oh, we kind of always go this way. She's like, yeah, but let's just go that way. So we walk, and there's a little street that says, like, Lake Cove something. And I'm like, all right, this is an interesting development, so we'll take this. Mm-hmm. And we find this beautiful lake basically 150 yards from my house that I didn't even know existed across the street in this neighborhood. It's gorgeous. So the last couple of days we've been walking around this lake, watching birds catch fish. I'm counting turtles in the water. I mean, it's like this whole wildlife, beautiful zoo-type area without Tiger King, Crazy Joe Exotic. But my walk was just like fences on either side of me and this awful, like, right next to a road, loud cars and trucks, like, walk. I could have been doing this the entire time if only I would have walked in the other direction.
I just wish
but
I
because
could
I don't
metaphor.
Branch out, I never got to. But I'm telling you, it is. I'm going over there today. It's just immaculate.
That's awesome.
Your boy counts turtles and what looks at the birds. And a month ago, it would have been the most boring Sunday afternoon ever.
I know.
Yesterday, it was a godsend, dude. I was like, wow, this is so lovely out here.
Like, Grant, I'm going to go to the lake with all the turtles. Do you want to do that or watch Nats pregame? I think you know the answer,
right.
Honey.
Yeah,
let me
1
know when you
to
get back.
4:30 is going to be Nats. I'll probably find a West Coast game starting at 4:05 somewhere in L.A. or San Francisco after that. Wake me up at about 8:30 and let me know what you want to do for 14 minutes before
I'm
we have dinner.
I'm keeping the calendar notifications. I decided. I just want to remember that they're there. You know what I mean? I get the little buzz with the bzzz in 15 minutes, Nats first pitch against the Mets on Sunday. You know, I'm keeping them. I was going to get rid of them because it made me depressed each
Why?
Time.
Why?
That's
like not getting stuff out of the room after you lose a loved one. I feel like you just need to move on.
I want to remember that, A, we're missing something, and I want to keep that memory alive, but B, knowing that it will come back at some point. It will come back. I don't want it out of mind. I want to honor their memory.
Not if you
right
ask Eric
chest.
Bickle. It won't come back at any point. I kid because I care. I'm doing the Sunday show with EB now.
Yeah.
We were discussing yesterday the future of sports. But, man, I can't wait. It's going to be good when it does. And I'm hoping that we get football this fall. Donald Trump says it'll be back in September. I'm not sure if I'm quite buying that. Seems a little bit bullish at this point, a la Easter. We'll all be back at church, but I guess we'll find out. I mean, I like the idea that he's going to try to at least keep the commissioners thinking about getting their games back as soon as possible because we all need it. There's no doubt about that. We are Grant and Danny. We are just getting going. There was a tough loss in the DC sports family yesterday. We'll discuss the life, the career of Bobby Mitchell next right here on The Fan. We're on Twitter if you want to hit us up there, at Grant H. Paulson for me and at Funny Danny for DR. Bobby Mitchell, the first black player in the history of the Washington Redskins, died yesterday at 84 years old. The Hall of Fame NFL star who began as a running back with the Browns and finished really as a receiver with the Redskins, passing away with a cause of death currently undisclosed. He was a seventh-round pick in 1958, University of Illinois. And if you look at the career, 11 seasons in the league, halfback with the Browns before becoming one of the best receivers in the league with the Redskins. I mean, he was a legend as a player, really was, forgetting for a moment all of the amazing things he did in terms of activism and breaking down barriers. Just as a player, he was special, unique, and a game changer. The Hall of Fame president and CEO David Baker yesterday saying the game lost a true legend today. Bobby was an incredible player, a talented executive, and a real gentleman to everyone with whom he worked on or competed against. You know, here's what's interesting. You know, he spent 30 years in the Redskins organization.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize this, that it went that long, but he played with the Redskins and retired in 1969. At that point, he started working for the team and for more than 30 years served as an assistant general manager for all three of the Redskins' Super Bowl victories. Retired in 2002 after he was upset. He felt like he'd been passed over for a GM opportunity by Jack Kent Cook. In reading up the history, he was pretty frustrated with Kent Cook. Not necessarily mad that Charlie Casserly had gotten the job, who he was friends with, but he didn't like how he handled it and not talking to him. But he gave his entire post-career football life to the Redskins organization into the 2000s as well. One of the more iconic Redskins of all time, Danny.
So there's a number of things. And I obviously never saw him play. So years ago, I remember asking my dad about Bobby Mitchell. And he could not stop gushing about Bobby Mitchell. Just a couple nuggets on the player. So he had to share the backfield in Cleveland with a running back, a little-known guy named Jim Brown, maybe the greatest of all time at that position. So his numbers there as a running back were good, but not unbelievable. Who knows if he's the lead back, what happens? So he decides, or he converts to receiver. His first few games as a receiver, listen to this game log. 6 catches, 135 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 for 94 and a touchdown, 7 for 147, 2 touchdowns, 7 for 158 and a touchdown, 8 for 147, 2 touchdowns, 5 for 158, 2 touchdowns. How about that right out of the gate when people aren't doing that? The consistency during a stretch where people didn't throw, he's basically 60 catches, 900 yards around the league lead in touchdowns as he's doing that. There's one player in the history of the National Football League with 250-plus rushing yards, 2,500-plus rushing yards, and 7,500-plus receiving yards. His name is Bobby Mitchell. He's the only player ever to do that. Just speaking to how unique and amazing that
he's
he truly
kind of like
was.
A Le'Veon Bell, Christian McCaffrey type at a time where it didn't exist, as you said.
It didn't
exist. And again, I want to just reiterate, we're talking about a career that spanned from 58 to 68. So these numbers, when you hear them, have to be compartmentalized that way.
Sure, I mean, they won't jump the out lead. At you now, right.
His first year in Washington, he had a year that if Terry McLaurin did it this year, you'd be giddy in a pass-happy NFL. 72 catches for 1,384 yards and 11 touchdowns in 1962. In 1963, the following season, he went for 1,436 yards as a receiver. He caught a 99-yard touchdown. He averaged over 100 yards per game. So twice he led the league in yards. He led the league in touchdowns. He led the league in catches at different points. And that's all the on-the-field stuff. I mean, really, we're doing him a disservice by not talking about the off-the-field stuff first. There's a image that everybody has seen 100 times of Muhammad Ali when Muhammad Ali was deciding in 1967 at the Cleveland Summit that he was not going to be joining the war. He was not going to enlist during Vietnam. And there were a bunch of players around him in that picture, and everyone remembers Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Jim Brown sitting there. Well, Bobby Mitchell's in that photo. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is one of the guys in that picture who was one of the leaders among the African-American athletes at that time in terms of activism. Inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1983, was also considered one of the lead civil rights advocates who worked with organizations including the NAACP all the way up through the end of his time on this spin and rock. Bobby Mitchell dying yesterday at 84 years old. 84 is a good run, but it doesn't make it any easier.
No, it's just – it's and I always hate that it takes the passing of somebody to truly appreciate, you know, what they did. But it's, you know, it's part of it. You look back and look at those accomplishments. I think you summarized very well. I mean, you can add in, again, to what he did as a player, as a Pro Bowl caliber running back, Pro Bowl caliber receiver. And, oh, by the way, how about 8 return touchdowns as well? I think 5 kickoffs and 3 punt returns, if I've got those numbers right. But, you know, one of the things I always like to do, GP, is and you know, arguments with folks in my dad's generation and even older, you know, he'll always tell me that, you know, such and such a basketball player was the best. And I'm going, well, that's great, Dad, but he was going against me. You know, a guy that never dribbled with his left hand, or, you know, some dude that was like 6'5" and, you know, lived on a farm. Like, there's no way that it's the same as, like, you know, going up against Andre Drummond in the post. You know what I mean? It's just a different era. But this is a guy, in terms of Bobby Mitchell, that, you know, had he had the same training methods that folks have today year-round, this is the ultimate today's player. This is the Swiss Army knife. This is a guy that's in the slot one play, out of the backfield the next. Imagine Andy Reid with a toy like this. Imagine, you know, a Sean McVay with a Bobby Mitchell on his roster, right? A guy that could quite literally do nearly everything you could do on offense. And an all-time great Redskin, all-time great person. And it's one of those things where you're right. It's a shame that it takes his passing to sort of appreciate and remember some of these things, but man, oh, man, what a career, what a life.
Yeah, and the first black Washington Redskin again. I mean, you go back through the history, and we can discuss it with Rick Snyder and David Elfin today, but it wasn't like the Redskins were leaders in terms of integration.
The opposite of that.
They made it harder than any organization in football to have a locker room with any diversity and to have players like Bobby Mitchell, African-American, excellent athletes playing in Washington. And he broke down that wall, and he did it, by the way, while being the best receiver in the team's history at that time, probably. You see some of the outpouring of support for him and the statements that have come out. Dan Snyder saying, "I was extremely saddened to hear the news about the passing of the great Bobby Mitchell. Bobby was a Hall of Fame player and executive and represented the Redskins organization with integrity for over 50 years. His passion for the game of football was unmatched by anyone I have ever met." Charlie Casterly worked in the front office with Bobby Mitchell, saying, "So sorry to hear of the passing of former Redskins Bobby Mitchell. I worked with Bobby for 23 years. He was a friend and mentor. What I remember most was his guidance and support when I was an intern. He was a Hall of Famer on and off the field." Robert Griffin saying, "R.I.P. to the great Bobby Mitchell. Hail to the Redskins." Michael Wilbon, "So very, very sad to hear of the passing of Bobby Mitchell, one of the great players ever, one of the great football minds ever, and one tremendous man." Brian Mitchell, longtime Redskins return man who obviously had a close relationship with him. "I will really miss him. Bobby was totally a class act. He was an awesome player, social activist, philanthropist, and out of this world man. My condolences go out to Gwen and the family." Just some of the many folks who have come out to honor the life and to say goodbye to Bobby Mitchell, born in 1935, and his life ending yesterday, sadly, as the former Redskins great has passed away. But I think that's kind of the lasting impact he'll have. Anyone who's been around the Redskins organization at any point, you know, prior to 2002 certainly, but at any function really since, has probably rubbed elbows with or seen him. He was still involved until a couple of years ago with the team. You know, what's sad is, in just reading about his history, you know, that while it got patched up, his days with the Redskins ended with him very upset and very frustrated because he did want to be the first black general manager. And he thought he had kind of earned that, and he felt like he'd been passed over for it. Now, he felt like he could leave and walk away when he did because Ozzie Newsome had gotten that opportunity with the Baltimore Ravens at the time. But, you know, that's tough. That's just seeing that, it kind of gave me a little, I don't know, punch to the stomach yesterday. There's one chapter of this Redskins Bobby Mitchell book that didn't go the way it probably should have for him, which is too bad. But man, was it not an unbelievable run.
Certainly was, and he will be missed. The impact, it's probably hard to overstate, I would say. Like, you know what I mean? Just, A, how great a player he was, the role that he took, and, you know, it's, I don't know if anybody asks necessarily to have that kind of microscope on them, where it's like, "Hey, by the way, you're the first black player, so here we go." You know, like, you're the leader, first into the breach on something that hadn't happened to that point. So an immense amount of pressure. And he handled everything with an incredible grace that is pretty well documented. So he will be missed.
If you guys would like to weigh in, if you're one of our older listeners and you recall actually, you know, his post-playing career and or interactions or seeing him, we'd love to hear from you. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 is how you can call us. We will get back into Bobby Mitchell one way or the other when we talk about his career and legacy with David Elfin, who's covered the Redskins for decades and as a historian of the team at 11:30 this morning. Next, the President of the United States tells Roger Goodell he wants football in September. Is that actually a possibility? We're Grant and Danny.
About your call with the sports commissioners, did you say you'd like to see people back, fans back in arenas in August?
Absolutely. I want fans back in the arenas. By whenever we're ready. I mean, as soon as we can, obviously. And the fans want to be back, too. You know, they want to see basketball and baseball and football and hockey. They want to see their sports. They want to go out onto the golf courses and breathe nice, clean, beautiful, fresh air. No, the
fans. Can
I can't tell you. I can't tell you a date, but I think it's going to be sooner rather than later.
Sooner than later, says Donald Trump, the President of the United States, about when we will be back in arenas watching sports. In fact, he held a call with all of the commissioners of all of the major sports leagues this weekend. And according to the reporting done by Adam Schefter and Adrian Wojnarowski, who had sources telling them what happened on that call, what Trump told the commissioners was that he thinks we could be back in the stadiums and the arenas by August. And more importantly, I guess, at this point, that the NFL season should be expected to start in September on time, according to what he told Roger Goodell. We'll get into that in just a second. A quick lay of the land here. We just found out Thomas Davis, the new Redskins linebacker, a former Walter Payton Man of the Year, who's been one of my favorite players in the NFL outside of Washington for years and years, is going to be on the show today at 1:30 in 3 hours. I'm pumped about that.
Nice, man.
He is an awesome guy. He's a heck of a player. I'm not sure how much he's got left in the tank. We can ask him and talk about that. He's been brought in to help Ron Rivera set up his culture. But if he is anything today like I've heard him before in interviews, he'll be a lot of fun to listen to. So make sure you're tuned in coming up at 1:30. Already one of my favorite Redskins. He hadn't played a down for the team, I'm just going to tell you. I am a big Thomas Davis fan as a human being.
It happens to us sometimes, buddy. Like, remember when we met John Bostic at training camp, and we're both like, you know who's going to be great for the Redskins is John Bostic. Can he come over for a barbecue? Like,
yeah, good locker room guy. But I'm telling you, Thomas Davis, you just see certain human beings and how they conduct themselves, and you are drawn in by it, and you're enamored by it, and there are these attractive qualities that they possess.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those guys, man. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show today.
Same here.
In the 1 o'clock hour. But you just heard from Donald Trump there, and again, this comes from this conference call that he had with commissioners is why we're talking about this and why he was being questioned, where we got this audio from reporters on whether or not and when these leagues are going to come back over the next few months. He is very bullish. Now, I think what he is doing, not unlike when he said that he wanted the economy kind of back on track and people back in the churches by Easter, he is trying to be overly positive and optimistic, and he's got an economic aspect to worry about here where he wants to basically make everything seem as normal as possible. I'm not sure what he is suggesting is realistic. I can't imagine he actually believes it. But there's a juxtaposition here, Danny, where it is kind of opposed to what we saw from one of the lead NFL doctors, which didn't quite say that they need a vaccine before they can play, but essentially that they need to be able to test all of the players and make sure that nobody has COVID-19 before they can move forward. Mm-hmm. It just seems like September's unrealistic, doesn't it?
It does to me. And I'm not, and I hate to just be a defeatist Danny here, but the thing that I keep coming back to is kind of that last point that you just made. So there, to me, there are two paths. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Pete and I did on our 12 to 3 Sunday show. And the first path is if there's a vaccine for the population, you can do whatever the hell you want. That's a ways away. I mean, even the fastest, most, you know, lax regulation, whatever. This is the only thing we're working on. You know, let's sprint to the finish line here is, you know, 13, 14, up to 18 months. And that's, you know, we've already started and we're still working away on that. So I say, wait, like I have nothing to do with it. But you get it. Like the smart people that are on these sorts of things. The second is if you are able to then take whatever players are involved in your league, isolate them from anybody else as best you possibly can, and then basically test them every day before competition starts, right? Because think about what happened. Rudy Gobert tested positive. All sports since have been canceled, right? All it takes is one person to reignite this and to boomerang it again, because then it means that now that person's symptomatic, and next thing you know, everybody they've come into contact with, and you can do that, you know, the doubling in the math permutation game again. So to me, if you're able to then, let's say for the sake of argument, you played every game of a season in an arena that's connected to a hotel, and all the players are in that hotel, and nobody else is in there, and they just walk from the hotel to the arena, and everybody that's affiliated with those games is tested every single day, maybe you could get this off the ground. I just don't see logistically a way to do it.
Those players aren't allowed to see families then for months, right?
Right, and how realistic is that?
I
just,
it's not.
To me, it's just so hard to do without a vaccine, which is a next year kind of thing.
And you got no media, right? There's no access. Now, that's a very small part of this in terms of interviews or locker room. I mean, who cares about that for right now? But yeah, I just, there are so many things that have to be thought about, so many minor details to this that have to be laid out. To your point, when one player got it, the entire world shut down, essentially. If one player gets it again, who's played in one of these games, what does that mean for the other teams that they have recently played against? I mean, therein lies my issue. Now, I have no problem with playing these games without crowds. I could tell you that having watched WrestleMania, I think it was probably better for wrestling fans to have WrestleMania than not. but it was really weird. It was awkward at best television, at times bad some of the match television without the crowd. I think football would pay the price, just like basketball and hockey and so many of these other sports, without the crowd. It does add a lot, but we're no longer looking for best case scenario. We're just kind of looking for what is tolerable. What could you do to just get these games in to give us something to watch? Here was the president again, Donald Trump, talking about him wanting to get sports going again as soon as possible.
I just spoke with the commissioners, leaders of, I would say, virtually all of the sports leagues. They want to get back. They got to get back. They can't do this. The sports weren't designed for it. The whole concept of our nation wasn't designed for it. We're going to have to get back. We want to get back soon, very soon.
We all want to get back. I mean, that's not really the debate here. Nobody wants to be sitting in their house, right, not seeing other human beings. We're not designed to be these antisocial creatures, these hermits who just kind of chill in our basements. Of course, we all want to do that. The question is, when will it be safe to? When will the doctors give us the go-ahead? When will people like Fauci say that it is okay to have thousands of people sitting in a stadium? One more cut from the president in relation to the sports leagues and when they'll come back on social distancing. You know, and the idea maybe that this is not here to stay for an extended period of time.
And, you know, we're not going to have separation for the rest of our times on the planet. We need it for this period of time. But eventually people are going to be able to occupy those seats in arenas next to each other, like we have for all of my life and all of your life. They want to sit next to each other at restaurants. They don't want to be, 6 feet away. And
how would an NFL season that actually does start in September look in that first month? I think that's the best way to go about this conversation with people on the phones right now. I mean, if you guys are the sports fans that I know you are, this is something you're talking about with buddies constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is all I've been discussing with the people that I text with about football. Will we have a league in September? Start, yes or no? And what will it look like? What type of precautions will have to be put in place to allow us to have football? Will we have all 32 teams competing with all of their players on the field? Will some of the players be deemed able to play and others not? Are you going to basically have guys just take their temperature every game day and practice day, and if they have a temperature, go home? I mean, how is this going to work? 800-636-1067 is the number. 800-636-1067. We'll get your calls in, and we'll give you our thoughts on an NFL in September and what it might look like if we do try to make it happen next on Grant and Danny. In a weekend conference call, the president of the United States told the commissioner of the NFL, expect the league to start on time in September. Now, forget for a second that I'm not quite buying that that's going to happen. Danny, it doesn't sound like you are either.
I'm not. And I hate to just be pessimistic or defeatist about it. It's just there's that one logistical hurdle I can't get over. One player has it, then we just have to kind of start over again.
Understood.
Right? Unless move past that for a second. Right?
Succinctly, I'm saying it's not going to happen. You are as well.
Correct, yes.
Let's say that it does. Let's just play along here. What will it look like? What has to be done? What precautions would need to be taken? How could you actually functionally have an NFL in September? That is the question for you at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. And what type of hurdles would need to be cleared, do you think? Let's go to the phones and start off on line one with Sal in Arlington. Sal, if there is football in September, how do we make it work?
I just don't think they'll be able to start or even have a football season. I was just reading the up-to-date statistics and pretty accurate numbers that they've been using on the Arlington County website. And the virus in Virginia is not going to peak until probably the middle of July. And I couldn't believe it, but they're expecting over 3,000 deaths in Virginia alone, about the same in Maryland. I mean, I don't think the people are going to be ready for anything for a long time.
I appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, look, speculating on how many people are going to die and when this thing will peak and when it won't.
That's not for us.
That's cool if you want to go do that somewhere. We're not doing that here. I'll tell you that right now. I get enough doom and gloom every time I turn on TV and every time I turn on another radio show. So I'm not going to sit here and project deaths for you. I'm not going to play that game. That's not what we're doing. Also, nobody knows. I listen to the experts like you do. They have anticipation, speculation. They've been wrong a couple times over on this. They could be wrong again. I hope 3,000 people in this Commonwealth don't die. That's what I will tell you.
Experts
but back
not
to
that
the
long
topic.
Ago said, yeah, said go to a restaurant, come down to Chinatown.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
come visit us. Let's fly. I mean, so it is ever morphing.
Nobody
we're
knows.
Doing his best guess here. That's
exactly.
What, we're doing.
What you should do is listen to the smartest people. That's what I'm advocating for, and you're probably quoting some of them, and that's fine. But we don't know yet, okay? So let's just kind of take it as it comes. But specific to what we're talking about on our sports talk show right now, which is how would you have an NFL season, you're saying, I don't think they can. And I think that's a reasonable phone call. Thank you for the call. 800-636-1067. If you want to tell me, like Danny and I are, that you don't think it's possible, that's fine. You could call in and say that. And you just did, which is cool. You don't see it being an authentic possibility? No issue with that. Let's go to line three, Jason in Annandale. Jason, what's up, man? You're on Grant and Danny. How's it going?
It's going well, guys. I actually talked to each one of you this weekend on your individual weekend shows.
Oh,
I wanted
nice,
to expand a little bit on my – Danny had actually mentioned my idea that I had spoken to him about doing kind of like the Braves field has the attached hotel and everything like that. I really think that's the only realistic way, and I don't think it's a real alternative. It's just one of those things where they're going to have to go to guys and say, hey, I know you're not making any money. Those that are interested, we'd like to put on this tournament style type deal where everybody's enclosed. Yeah, you're not going to see your family for 2 months, but there's people like me. I'm not going to see my family at least till June 10th. It's the only practical way of doing it, and it would have to have testing, you know, mixed in and things like that.
So to expound on what, and thanks for the call, Jason, and that's kind of where he had this idea yesterday on our show, and it started to, you know, incubate for me a little bit. Basically, you take places like Rogers Center in Toronto or I think the Omni in Atlanta or maybe someplace that's got a hotel sort of, you know, as an attaché to whatever arena that you're going to play in, right? And if you are then able to quarantine all the participants and everybody that's got anything to do with the league in that place, and the only thing they're doing is going to play their sport and going back to their place of quarantine somehow, that would maybe be the scenario that you could do it. You'd have to really limit the number of people because every – new person that comes into contact with one of these guys and gals is now your level of risk has started to go up to a level that may become unacceptable. So whatever the skeleton crew bare minimum that it takes to put on these games, you leave a camera running in the same spot. You don't even have a camera guy. I mean, everything like that is just sort of, you know, the exact bare minimum, and it's not going to look like we're used to having it look like, but I think that would be the logistical way to do it. It's a big ask of these players. But I think that's it. Everybody's got big asks, right?
Well, what I think he said that is a slam dunk is a lot of guys are going to tell you no, probably.
Mm.
And, okay, no problem with that. I don't think you can mandate based on a contract or tell people who are under contract for the next 3 years, no, we're playing, you got to show up, we're finding you. Nothing like that. This is an opt-in situation probably at this point where you say, listen, guys, we are willing to pay you to play in this league, and we will do everything we can to keep you healthy. We are going to test every single day. My buddy John Neal runs Metropolitan Moving and Storage.
Yeah, man.
They're still moving people all over the place. They just moved Dar into his house this past week. They dropped me off some boxes. They're going to be moving me in the coming few weeks. Every single day.
Next month, yeah.
Every single day, he has every employee he has show up basically and take their temperature in the morning. They do all kinds of these precautions, and that's just his little moving company here in the D.C. area, right? The leagues, including the National Football League, have to put something in place where they determine day in and day out that you're not showing any symptoms. Now, what is worrisome and scary is you could not be showing any symptoms and still be sick and have COVID-19, I suppose, which is frightening. I don't have an answer for that. But I think it is an opt-in. I think it's the younger players that probably don't have a wife or kids who live on their own who could go live in that hotel instead of quarantining in their house with a buddy or something like that.
But do you see that as the path?
They could
like,
go play.
You got to quarantine the guys? But you mean, you know
what
I mean?
How could you not?
That seems to be the big hurdle to overcome. If you could get a critical mass of players to make a league, you basically go, this is where you guys are going. You're going to be sequestered. Do you agree that's kind of the bare minimum step?
Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't initially. Yeah. I mean, because, again, it takes one player getting it, and then you're shutting down your operation again, or you're halting games, or everyone on the team's being tested, and you probably aren't practicing, and that team can't play that week. I don't think we're going to have 32 teams in a league if they do it necessarily in September. I think when he mentions, like, tournament style, I think you're basically trying to put together collections of NFL players on rosters to have some type of variation of football to just entertain people. You know, that's probably as good as I can see it materializing in September. Now, if they just wait until deeper into the winter, perhaps, to have an abbreviated handful of game, like almost strike shortened season, so to speak, and then a postseason, you know, maybe you can have it look a little bit more like we're used to. I think September might be a quick turnaround at this point to start everything correctly, unless something dramatic changes that isn't being anticipated right now, which
that's
is
right.
possible.
Yeah.
I mean, there were plenty of experts that were surprised by how serious this got, how quickly. You know, maybe it could go the other direction.
And it's certainly what that's kind of what you're hoping for. Well, that's what everyone's hoping for, obviously, is every new news item has been negative for the most part, right, as it turns to new developments. There's still room for plenty of upward growth here for this stock, so to speak, where it could be, hey, you know, this treatment is effective, or these antibody tests are going, or there's mass testing available to the point that we don't have to just ration it for people that have been exhibiting symptoms for X number of days or whatever the heck it is, you know. We don't have to have the conversation about the United States' handling of this kind of thing. You've got plenty of news outlets for that. But just if there is a major positive news development in this regard for either a simple, you know, disposable or whatever it is, a mass testing capability, that's the minimum where you could start to get people like a sports league together for something. To me, though, to really and truly have games, there's got to be that vaccine. So ultimately, the leagues as we know it coming back in September, I just find that hard to believe. But
EB was saying that too, and I'm not on that team that you need vaccines to play these leagues. I don't agree with that because there are a lot of illnesses we don't have vaccines for that people, you know, are at risk of getting. I think you've got to quell the numbers. You know, I'm not smart enough to know how many people getting it becomes a juice worth the squeeze situation. But there are plenty of things that you can get that are passed along all the time that are either potentially lethal or not. And we all kind of live our lives. I don't think we need a vaccine to start playing again. If that's the case, then you can kiss sports goodbye for 15 months, probably 18 months.
So but I'm confused why you wouldn't. Well, you don't think you'd need a vaccine to play as normal. Because I'm talking about normal. In order to do anything normally again, we need a vaccine. That means fan attendance. That means games as we're used to seeing them. Wouldn't you need a vaccine for that?
I don't think so, no.
I do not understand that. Because to me, now we're talking about like modified and we're trying to figure out a bunch of different steps and hurdles and a maze so this thing can't get to certain people. And that's fine. But for sports as normal, how would you not need a vaccine to gather tens of thousands of people together?
Well, right? I guess what I'm hoping for and what I'm assuming is that at some point, what is right now an outbreak is no longer that. And it's another illness that, like other illnesses that you can get, is out there potentially, but it isn't nearly as prevalent.
Okay. So that's either herd immunity, which, you know, which means it runs the entire length of the country and everybody gets it at some point, or we sort of develop that, or a vaccine, I would think. I'm just talking about to get normal games like we expected to tune into before all this happened on Masson and, you know, and the NBA and whatever else.
Sure.
But for modified stuff, I'm with you. You wouldn't necessarily need a vaccine.
Yeah. I just think at some point, like, I don't think we're all going to be sitting in our houses 2 years from now not going to work if we don't have a vaccine. I think at some point people are just going to have to go back to living their lives and – I hate to say see what happens, but I think that's kind of at some point like what's going to have to happen. And I think if the numbers go down enough, it's going to be like other illnesses that you could potentially contract and get. I think right now we're in the middle of an outbreak, and we're kind of viewing it from the eye of the storm. He's Danny. I'm Grant. You can call us at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 if you'd like to. You can also tweet us at Grant H. Paulson and at Funny Danny if you've got some thoughts on when and if the NFL returns, the president, the commissioner, on a conference call this weekend saying that they want it to happen on time in September. In fact, Trump apparently told Goodell to prepare for that. Do you buy that? 800-636-1067. Also, some leagues are getting creative with some skills competitions. Next, what skills competition would you want to see that they could actually pull off?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.